You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast, where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Birthright Part 1. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
James, how's it going, buddy?
Everything is going well.
Everything is going well. Good, good, good. I'm going to turn you down a little bit here.
Ready again? Oh, anyway, yeah. I say that everything's going well, but I'm ill. I had a cold. And, it's not particularly nice. But as long as I don't come across as sounded odd, then you guys should be lucky.
Yeah, you got a little bit of something in your voice, but it's all right. It's good. As long as you're good to go, we're good.
No, we're good to go.
Okay. So before we get into the episode, let's talk Picard real brief. And this is going to be real brief, but...
Why is it going to be real brief?
Well, because I got an hour and a half tops, and then I got to jump up and run.
Okay.
But basically, yeah, and I don't want it to take away. I don't want Picard to take away from the heart of our main dish. But basically, I'm still getting this. You know, this is all seeming convoluted, but it's starting to make a little more sense. I get Picard's mission. We're going to go find Bruce Maddox. I'm still not understanding the reclamation of the Borg. And now this episode, episode 3, it's called The End is the Beginning. He goes back 14 years to where he resigns from Starfleet. We see that part. We see the lady who is invested in him also losing her job, which is why she's pissed and is holding a rifle at him. But then we see a holding cell of Romulan former drones. What are they trying to do with these people? Help them get over their time with the Borg?
Well, yeah, I didn't think this was a holding cell, as in kind of like a criminal holding cell. I thought this was more like a medical holding cell.
Yes.
Like a bit of like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest kind of thing.
Yeah. But a prison is still a prison. No matter how you slice it. But these people are like demented. So what's the goal here, do you think?
Well, I suppose eventually bring them back into society. Rehabilitate them.
Okay.
I would imagine. We don't quite know how many Romulans there are, so it might be the case that kind of like every Romulan is extremely, extremely, extremely special. Because there are just so few of them around the galaxy. So right. maybe go into the Borg and getting these Romulans out from the Borg. Maybe that actually is a significant number of the Romulans that are left.
Fascinating.
Although, having said that, they have far too many Romulans driving around in biker gear from the Tau Shiar that kind of completely throws that theory out the window.
Oh, of course. Where are all these Romulans coming from? I mean... I think Picard is right. The Federation is what, dead, or it's a shell of itself. That's for sure. How many thousands of people died on Mars when the synths took over? Because what I understand is that the synths were being reprogrammed by the Romulans. For what? They haven't quite figured that part out yet. And then we got these guys either beaming into Picard's house and trying to kill him and his two Romulan buddies. And we get a big old fight, which includes Admiral Picard being thrown across the room at his age. I wondered, how the hell did he get up? I mean, he must have hips made of steel.
On the good guy's side, there's basically two middle-aged ex-Romulan Tau Shiar agents. and that's it, right? And there's like wave after wave of these of these biker dudes with helmets coming in. I'm not entirely sure that it's expected that the good guys would have won on this one. I think they would have been killed.
Or like I said, at least maybe he broke a hip. But this makes no, absolutely no sense. How old is he? Well, he is...
Oh, he's supposed to be like 90 or so in Picard.
Is he? Yeah, I'm looking him up on Memory Alpha, and I'm not really getting age yet. But 90 years old, and they just throw him around, and he just jumps back up. Hell, if that had happened to me now, I'd be down for the count. Oh, mommy, mommy. I don't get it. But, okay, let's see. So the lady hates him, but she calls him JL.
Yep.
JL.
Yep.
Fascinating. And they did find a pilot who's willing to take him to look for Bruce Maddox. What did they call him?
Rios,
yes. When we meet him, he's got a hunk of metal coming out of his shoulder. Who in the writer's room said, hey guys, what if when we meet Rios, he's got this hunk of metal coming out of his shoulder on a perfectly tuned ship that looks clean? Where's the piece of metal come from? What was the purpose of that? It doesn't matter. Let's put it in anyway. What are these guys thinking? This is so weird. And he's got a hot EMH that's in his image.
Well, hang on. I got confused. He's got a... Didn't he have two guys? He had an EMH and an ENH, right? I thought there was like an emergency navigation hologram there as well.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah, you might be right. I think I might have glossed over that one, but yeah. So he's on this ship with these two holograms. Are holograms considered synths?
Well, that's actually a point that I was going to make, because if you're looking at artificial intelligence, there's really no difference if you want to put the artificial intelligence inside an android's body or if you want to put it in within a computer program. I mean, it's the same basic thing. So I don't know whether or not that's considered to be illegal. I mean, okay. We're not told. I'm sure we'll find out soon enough. And I'm sure that they're fine. Yeah. I would imagine that they're fine.
Well, I mean, you know, the EMH on Voyager did once on occasion go nuts. You know, like 10 cc's nitric acid straight into a wound. Yeah, he's just trying to kill him.
Oh, so really who went crazy more? Was it the EMH or was it Data?
I think Data.
You think so?
I do.
Do you remember the time in Equinox when they just reprogrammed the EMH? I love the idea of you just suppress the moral subroutines. And it's like, okay, I've now not got a problem at all.
There you go. No problem. That ain't a problem.
It's almost as if when you've got the computer program for the hologram, there's a folder marked ethics, and you can click on it and press delete, and that's fine. I mean, why would they have... They should have prevented that from happening, right?
Yeah. Plus, Voyager never had a backup of him. We lose him.
No, they had a backup.
No. Well, I thought they said there was no way to get him back if this doesn't work.
Yeah, but hang on a second. But in the episode where... they pick him up like centuries from now.
Mm-hmm.
What's the episode called? It's one of my favorites. It's the one where they've got the they've got the people and they're looking back on the interaction with the Voyager crew. And that's a copy that they got. They got the copy.
I thought they got the. It was a backup copy. You're right. Yeah, you're right. Okay, maybe they do. I don't know why. Why don't I mean?
Living witness. Living
witness. Yes. Why couldn't they even have five doctors on duty? Well, every time they needed, they had an emergency computer, activate 9 more EMHs. They could all use the same database. It's just a matter of having photons here and there. They do it on the holodeck all the time.
True. Thousands of them. Yes.
And then when they were able to get him go around with the mobile emitter, you know, he's a field medic while everybody else is the, sick bay medic. But anyway, okay, so we're once again treated with the view of Mars burning and tens of thousands of people are dead. So they figure out where Bruce Maddox is. He's on Free Cloud.
Okay, so here's the problem that I have, okay, with this, because Picard really wanted to know where he was, right? Mm. He was really keen to know. And then he was doing a lot in order to get that bit of information. And then when someone gave him the information, he went, "Oh, of course!" As if, where else would he have been? I mean, could you not have just guessed?
I mean, you know, space is vast. There's a lot of places you could hide, but I can't wait till they actually describe what Free Cloud is. It's going to be interesting. So that's Picard so far. I'm still a little tossed on the Romulans everywhere. Romulans, oh my. But the plot with, or actually, I'm sorry. I said that wrong. I'm not even going to fix that. No, I'm a little concerned about the Borg. What's the purpose of reclamating the Borg? All these scientists coming on this Borg cube, what are they trying to do? Revive them? Are they trying to make them who they were before being assimilated? They're a little unclear, but no one, since the Romulans are in charge of this, there's something bad going on. But then Picard's mission to find Bruce Maddox, whether you like it or not, it's starting to make more sense. Now he's on a ship, I think things are going to become a little bit clearer now.
That's one thing I was going to say. I think the first three episodes had you kind of wrapped them up as a two-part pilot. I think at the end of the third episode, we're basically at the end of the pilot, it feels like to me. Because okay. Getting onto the ship, it's kind of like now got a little bit of direction,
right?
And I think that as soon as that has happened, I do think it hopefully opens up a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it will. I think it's starting, like you said, in the first two episodes, they're trying to jam pack everything into these episodes to get you on board, where it's getting a little confusing. But now I think they're starting to perhaps slow down a little bit and take in some of the story. So, we'll find out next week how this progresses. Anything else on that?
Yes. I mean, you didn't mention the big thing about the woman, Darj's sister, supposed to be in the Destroyer. That stuff's kind of, being pumped up. And then this episode has a Hugh in it. Did you miss Hugh?
Oh, that's who that was. Yes, I did by face. I mean, he doesn't look the same.
Well, no, I mean, but neither did you, like, 30 years ago, I imagine.
No.
But, yeah, they don't tell us. They don't tell us it's Hugh, right?
They don't. He's the one in charge of this project.
Indeed, he is.
Wow.
And, I mean, as a result, I mean, maybe there's going to be a payoff a little bit later on, but if we're not going to be told about him, and we've been told, we've had Bruce Maddox's name dropped 50 or 60 times already. Yeah. I'm a little bit confused as to, why. Soon enough, right, 7 of 9 is going to turn up, and I'm sure Picard's going to run into Hugh and stuff like that. Yeah. But I certainly didn't recognize the guy.
I didn't either. I didn't think about it. But it's weird, as I knew he was supposed to come on, I just didn't think of that. So, yeah, good point. Anything else?
Nope, that is all.
Okay. This is starting. I think it's starting to rebound. I don't remember what I. You know, I feel bad. I didn't keep a list of our ratings for.
Well, I'm pretty sure I went 4-2 with the last two, and I'll go 3 this time.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, I think 3 would be suitable for this one, and I don't remember what I said for the first two. So I'll go back and play with that later. So, okay, on to tonight's episode, which is Birthright Part 1. This is the 16th episode of Season 6 of The Next Generation. It was first aired on February 22nd, 1993, written by Brannon Braga and directed by Winrich Kolbe. And, let's see, guest starring for tonight's episode, Sadiq El-Fadil as Dr. Julian Bashbushusher. I don't know, the smartest doctor in the galaxy who couldn't figure out Data was the android on board. later. Okay, Dr. Bashir. James Cromwell. Right. I knew that voice was familiar. As Jaglom Shrek. Shrek. Where's Donkey? Christine Rose as Giral. Jennifer Gotti as Baal. And Richard Hurd as Lacour. So what do we think about this episode? I know you love this episode, Doc, so I'm going to go first. This is a love-hate. I'm not really getting into Worf finding Daddy, but the Data exploration of his inner soul is... this is kind of interesting. It's kind of interesting, so I'm kind of liking that so far. Worf spending 3/4 of the episode saying he would not have been taken captive, he would be dishonorable. Over and over and over again, he is dead. And so what does Worf do? He goes looking for him and gets what? Say it with me, guys. Captured. Poor Alexander, he's going to have to deal with this dishonor for the rest of his life. And I always thought it was 4 generations of dishonor. I guess it's only 3. What about you, Doc?
Maybe he's just assuming that Alexander's not having any kids.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's just very well aware of that fact. Okay, I love this episode. I think this episode's great. Now, I'm only talking about the first part, not both of them. Because, you know, the second part does very much become the Worf story. Whereas I always considered the Worf story to be kind of the B plot of this episode. I'm a big fan of Data. I love Data. But it's also really, really cool that the Enterprise goes to Deep Space Nine and you get to walk around the promenade and you see Bashir. And Bashir's great. Everyone loves Bashir, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Although I do have to say, I think that most people at this time did not love Bashir. I think they thought that he was horrendous until they found out about his... genetic modification in, you know, probably 2 years from now.
Yeah.
But I've always loved Bashir. I thought Bashir was a great character, and I like him in this episode. So yeah, I mean, you know, it's odd that for a kind of Klingon family centered episode, there's no Alexandra in here. But hey, you know, I'm not going to complain.
Well, I mean, do you want Alexander go with him, trance through the forest or the jungle?
I mean, there are a couple of occasions where, I mean, if Worf is supposed to be a single father, right, with his own kid at home, and his kid's like 4, or however old the kid is, I don't get how he spends so much time doing his exercises and then being able to leave the ship without even mentioning Alexander. I mean, so I imagine Alexander at this point is back on Earth or doing something. I don't know. I actually have no idea where he's expected to be most of the time.
He's in stasis.
Well, if anything, I think he's in like a fast growth, growth kind of a cylinder, because he grows up quick.
Oh yeah, he's a little boy here, and then in a few years, when Worf is on DS9, he's a man. Hey, what are you gonna do? Okay, so Captain's log. You know, these ain't perfect, but I try. The Enterprise has arrived at DS9 to assist in the repair of the Bajoran aqueduct system damaged by the Cardassian occupation. Since I never actually do any work, the station commander has invited me to take in a baseball game. No idea what that means, but I just hope I don't get my uniform dirty. Where is Sisko? Where is Dax? Where's Kira? Where's Odo walking around the promenade at the time? I find it fascinating when we go back to places like DS9, that none of the original crew is there except for, in this case, Bashir. And you don't even see Quark in his own bar.
No, true. But we do know where Dax is, right? Because doesn't Dax end up with Riker? They mention it later on. They mention it when Riker turns up, or at least Thomas Riker, who at this point we don't know who he is. When he gets introduced to Dax, they mention that they had obviously had a, not a thing, but they had had a night playing cards or whatever it was. So I imagine that's where Riker is. I mean, because we don't really see Riker that much in this episode, do we?
No.
So he's in the bar. And then, yeah, it's slightly odd that... what's her name? Crusher and Picard just wander onto the space station and then walk around and then get into a turbo lift and then say, ops. So it is odd that you don't see Bashir and co, but look, you'd end up having to pay them. And I'm sure they can't afford to pay them all.
Right, exactly. Because they even wondered that on the Emissary, DS9, when O'Brien is leaving the Enterprise for the last time. He walks onto the bridge, and who are all these people? Where's Riker? Where's Worf? How come Data isn't sitting at ops?
Actually, we don't even get O'Brien. O'Brien can't even be bothered to turn up, right?
For Emissary?
No, for this episode.
Oh, yes, exactly. Yeah, so where is he? Oh, well, he's probably in Jeffers' tube fixing something. Yeah,
but I find it really odd that the first discussion that they have is that, ooh, I'm going to go to a hollow suite, and then I'm going to have this little relaxation therapy. I mean, really? I really wouldn't. I mean, if you had access to a holodeck on the Enterprise, would you really want to go and spend money to sit in some sleazy bar? I mean, it can't be considered an attraction, can it?
No, no. It was Dr. Crusher's program where she was going to be carried by mists of air or something like that. I suppose Dr. Crusher, you know how she is. But I do need to correct one thing I said when I said we don't see anybody from DS9 except Bashir. That is wrong. We do see a rather attractive girl stroking the face of Morn. So I did like having Morn on. That was good. Okay.
Well, have you heard the story about Morn? Apparently, he went in for makeup. They tested him in makeup. Oh. I think he then was told to turn back up again, but it wasn't entirely clear. And he basically just ended up, I think, you know, between the pilot and the first couple of episodes, it wasn't clear whether he was going to be a regular or a regular person in the background. And the dude just took it on upon himself just to turn up. So it wasn't necessarily clear that he was expected to be part of the show, but he just hung around enough, and you know, obviously the suit and the look is pretty cool, but he just became part of the furniture. And then before long, right, by the time you're like four or five episodes in, it's like, hey, well, who's that guy? He's the main man. And then the same actor ended up playing Morn for 7 years, and you kind of think, did this guy like not get any other work, or what was the backstory there? How much time is it really taking out of his life? I find it fascinating that someone was so committed to a character that was pretty much just standing in the background. You know, it's like, you know, when you have Voyager and you know there's only 150 or 200 people on board, whatever the number was, but you know that over the 7 years you've seen. A whole load of more extras come in, and you could probably list a couple of hundred more than there's actually crew complement. But I love the fact that the Morton guy is he's always there, always reported for duty, and he did it for 7 years.
So basically he just squatted, and they felt pity for him and gave him a job. That is funny if that's true. All right. Okay. So, as I alluded earlier, we have Dr. Bashir in sickbay running some kind of test that gets caught by Data. And he walks in, and the guy says, hey, can you help me with this? And Data almost does. He starts to do the work and then realize, oh, wait a second, you don't belong here. But how does Bashir not know Data by face? I realize he probably never met him, but how many people have his skin tone and yellow eyes?
You're being nitpicky, I think.
I guess he is. But he is the smartest doctor in the universe, though.
I mean, yeah, kinda-ish.
Oh no, he is. That he threw in the towel on that test, and which let that other female doctor win the award. But he would have, and had he done that, maybe that would have they would have known he was genetically enhanced. But he seems to be the smartest doctor in the universe. But looking at a clear-cut android and go, Commander, Data. Oh, you're the android! Yeah, okay, whatever. I'll take that, whatever. That's fine. So Worf is enjoying his polymer and 10 Forward when a Uridian comes up to him named Shrek. No donkey. Comes up to him and says, Worf, your father is alive. Here we go. That's a way to piss off a Klingon. Let him know that his dad may be alive and being held captive.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is slightly odd. But at the same time, I can understand Worf not wanting people spreading malicious rumors, right?
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely true. Okay.
And I have to say that when I mean, I kind of, I do know at the back of my mind that James Cromwell was in this episode, but when his voice comes on, you do realize that, oh, it is him. It is him. I didn't recognize through the mask, but I recognized the voice.
Right, of course. That's what I said. Yeah, the voice was, it had to be him, but I couldn't think of his name offhand until I just read it. Okay, so it turns out a lot of Klingons from Kittimer were captured in Dishonor, no less. And so Worf returns to the ship, you know, to piss and moan around, bully his junior officers, and even spit at Riker for a second until he decides to return to his quarters and, you know, fight some air. I call it fighting air. Break a glass table, you know, because the table acted with dishonor.
I believe that it did. Yes.
It did. Yes. It was in his way. How dishonorable. Smash. It goes. Deanna comes walking in. And would you like to talk about what's bothering you, or do you want to break some more furniture?
Okay. Okay. So considering that Worf has been, you know, upset for maybe 12 hours a day top, you know, do you not think that as a Klingon, you have the right to be annoyed for a little bit of time? I mean, you know, Lou, don't you have the right to be a little bit frustrated without a therapist walking into your room? I mean, how long do you have to be annoyed before a therapist walks into the room? I think it has to be a couple of months at least. So
right.
I don't understand what Deanna is doing here.
Hey, get on top of it now, because if you let it fester, it's going to get worse. Especially for Worf. Okay, so Bashir's Gamma Quadrant machine, fascinatingly enough, doesn't know what it's supposed to do, but why don't we hook it up to the engine room's computers? That sounds like a wonderful idea, doesn't it? We don't have a clue what it does. And Data, stand over there. Yes, yeah, right in front of its shooter.
Yeah. I don't think, in fairness, I don't think it was a shooter, but there was a pointy end, and he did stand next to it.
Yeah. It's a good thing it was Data and not somebody else.
Yes, okay. That's true.
You know, Robin Leffler, if she was standing there, what it would have done to her. So the thing backfires and shoots Data in the chest, which sends him off into dreamland, where he sees his father as a young man in the blacksmith. What do you think of the... Are you saying that you believe this is the A plot and Worf is the B plot?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it probably doesn't make sense, but I'm much more interested in this than in Worf.
Oh, so it may not be, but it's for, in your case, it is. It makes sense. I agree with that, but still. So he sees him as a blacksmith smashing the hammer, And then all of a sudden he wakes up. So I like the dream sequence, you know, especially later on when we have Data flying around the ship and then outside the ship looking at it as he's in flight and then back into the ship. Those are pretty good, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
And sure, like, they've like recaptured, the flyby, it looks at least like it's a new kind of capture of the flyby of the Enterprise. It seemed on the episode, you know, on the source that I watched, it seemed to be a pretty nice, pretty nice, very detailed model.
Oh, yes, it did. It was very good. So Bashir looks like he has a kind of a bro crush on Data, don't you think? You know, following Data around.
Yeah. He's just enthusiastic.
Yes, he is. Yeah, because he's young, you know. Okay, so Data seeks out Worf to talk about the vision he had. How convenient, since Worf is in his own little dilemma.
So do you think that these guys... Do you think there's any reason to bring these storylines together? Because we only really have that one scene, right, where Worf is obviously down and deeply thinking about his predicament. And then Data kind of comes in and says, hey, I kind of had a dream about my dad. What do you reckon? And then Worf, in his mind, he kind of gets some things muddled up and things. And I understand that Worf has had visions, but is he really the only spiritual person on the Enterprise out of the crew of 1,000? So no one else there, you know, undergoes visions or, you know, meditation or deep thinking or contemplation or even yoga, for goodness sakes. That has to go straight to Worf?
I don't know, because he eventually goes to Picard too. But who would you have started with?
Well, it's always best to start with Picard.
I'm not entirely sure
that I... Hey, Riker, I need to discuss some of these dreams I've been having.
Yeah.
That's not going to go down well. So there's this bloke that's hit an iron, and I approach him from behind. Yep, that's enough, Data. Move on.
Move on. Yeah, or maybe even Guinan. Okay, so anyway. But he talks to Worf about, you know, about his vision, and then Worf relates a story when he was a little warrior and his adoptive parents took him to the lava caves of Nomot for the rite of Mushka. Sounds like a good place to spend a holiday on, doesn't it? You think the missus and the family would want to go there?
No, not really. Not really. And I always have visions, right? Is this with the human parents or his older, his Klingon parents? I assume it's with his human parents.
Human parents.
And, yeah. And whenever you hear that Worf did something like very, very, very Klingon-y, I always imagine that you've got these two human parents and it's like, oh dear, not again. We're going to have to take him here. We have to respect his culture. Yeah, but really? This is just crazy.
Sergei, he's having some problems again. Okay, let's take him to, what's it called again? Oh, Nomot. Okay, I get it. But I assume they probably dropped him off and went home. You know, I don't think they stuck around for the party.
No, I hope not.
So Worf, go ahead.
No, he'll be the only Klingon child dropped off with human parents. He'll be like, Mom, Dad, stop embarrassing me. Go.
Yeah, we don't need you. But we just want to talk to the counselors. No, get out. Okay, so Worf, who's in a mental breakdown of his own, tells Data he needs to find the meaning of the vision. Learning about him teaches about you. And about yourself, no matter where he is, no matter what he's done, you must find him. Oh, and there goes that light bulb in Worf's head. Yeah, that makes absolutely sense. So I'm going to do it. So he goes to Captain Picard and asks for a leave of absence. Picard wants to know what's going on. He tells him that some Uridian says his dad is alive and he's going to go infiltrate the camp. Kabla, Mr. Worf. Now, why didn't we see any of that? That must have went on the cutting room floor. Why do officers just leave the ship and do what they want at any time? Because you're not going to tell me Picard would have, he'd have no problem with this at all. Go ahead, Worf. Do what you want. Oh, he might be being held captive by Romulans? I understand what you're feeling. You must do it, Worf. Did we miss all that, or?
Actually, what is the episode when he actually does ask to run off?
That was when, with his brother Kern, to challenge the ruling of his father as a traitor.
Oh, no, and also in Redemption as well, right? He resigns his commission.
Yes, yes. Well, yeah, he lent them to the Klingon for a while, but once it started heating up, okay, I must recall you to duty.
Yeah, oh, yeah? Okay.
Well, screw you. And, of course, you quit a job, no notice, you tell the captain of the ship, screw off. You leave it, you go do what you're going to do, and then say, you think I can come back to work? You think? Is that okay? Of course, Mr. Worf, come back, I missed you.
Well, just don't tell them, just hope that they don't notice, and then you can just walk back in on Monday.
Right, yes. All right. So Worf took a little time off, and him and the Uridian head for the planet that his dad is supposedly at. His father is at. And I like the fact that Uridian says, okay, I'm done. It's a little bit over there. Go down the hill to the right of the springs, and good luck. I'll be back in 50 hours. So...
All right. Well, I mean, so originally the guy didn't want to take him at all, right? He only just wanted to sell the information.
Yeah.
And I always find it odd with Worf because he always ends up, he's supposed to be the good guy, but he does threaten a lot, doesn't he? I mean, it's not exactly a negotiation that takes place. It is more of a negotiation, you know, whilst being dangled upside down over a 50-foot drop.
Yeah. And everybody stop and watch. He looks angry. What's wrong with him? Where's Worf trying to maintain order on the promenade?
Well, at that point, Udo would have come in.
Yeah. Them out,
locked them up.
Yeah. That's enough of that. But then he'd have to get a hold of Picard, and he did what? Anyway. Wu, by the way, is studying Bajoran aqueduct management when Data comes in for some advice. Yeah. Data's been studying lots and lots of stuff on it, but he's unable to come up with a conclusive answer to what this dream means. So Picard gives him some sage wisdom again and sends him on his way. Well, Picard pretty much says the same thing Worf does, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, more or less. I mean, I'm a little bit concerned if you went to your boss and it was like, "Hey, boss, I had this, I had this really weird dream after eating too many mushrooms. It was this weird thing that happened." And his basic advice is, "Yeah, you know, try again, see if there are any answers." And it's not as if this, you know, being shot in the chest with a plasma beam's not dangerous.
No, of course not. He just got right up. It basically was a fuse. LaForge, tripped the circuit breaker and he came back to life. Something like that.
And actually, the one thing I didn't quite like about this is that, they don't know that this circuitry is there, or, you know, these nodes are there. And then it accidentally gets triggered by him being electrocuted. And obviously, it's not the first time Data's been electrocuted, but... You know, we'll claim it's some type of gamma quadrant weird energy or weird frequencies. That's fine. But once it occurred once, it's like, it's a complete mystery. Then they get him shot again. And then it's like, oh, yeah, yeah, this part of the circuitry. Oh, it's all fine now. And they kind of seem to answer the question. They seem to, you know, after the second vision, there are no questions left for Data to ask. He's fully on top of all of these dreams, and he's fully on top of these this new circuitry that he's discovered within his neural net. And I kind of thought, well, if it was going to be that easy, then you probably would have found it out after the first go. You wouldn't need to be shot through this chest twice.
Right. Well, they didn't have a clue what it was the first time, and it was so brief, he wanted to see what would happen the second time. Now, if this is his version of dreams, does it make sense that he went right back to the same dream? Because if it does make sense that he went back to the same dream instead of something else, is he going to go back there every single time? Can he change his dreams? Today I want to dream about walking on the beach, sandy beach with the ocean breeze flowing. Or what is it that, how did that happen?
I don't know. I'm not very good with dreams. I don't remember any of my dreams.
Yeah, I don't
certainly
either.
I don't have anything vivid like this. And in fact, have never done. Not in my entire life. Hmm. So whenever I see this depiction, I don't know whether this is, if anyone ever in the world has anything this clear. Like, you know, I can identify that I was walking down this particular street. I mean, that just doesn't happen to me.
Actually, you know, you're right. Most of the time, I can forget a dream. I may be dreaming the moment I wake up and forgotten it already. But there are times that I can remember, like, there was one I was in the car. I knew exactly where I was, 144th and Industrial Road, which means nothing to you. But we were going to the Oakview Mall, and we were approaching a set of overhead train tracks when there was a derailment, and I could see the train coming at us, actually derailed and about to hit us. And just that impact, I heard a kind of a sound, and then I woke up. And I that's something I don't know why, but I've remembered that for so many years. It's just as I could remember just as vivid as if I was dreaming it again. And then there are times, I think I've told you about this, there are times that I can actually direct my dreams. I know I'm dreaming and able to change my own situation or fly. You always have those flying dreams, but I always crash. Well, sometimes when I know that I'm dreaming, I can actually make myself continue to fly where I can feel the breeze. It's really bizarre, but there are some certain dreams that I can remember. I've even had my dad come to me in dreams because I knew I was dreaming and I knew I was in the basement of his house, and I'd run up the steps to see him quickly at his desk because I knew I was going to lose it soon. Ask him what is bothering me lately. You know, how do I handle this? What do I do with this? And sometimes he was able to give me my answer. But that's been a long time since that's happened. So I really like those. But in a way, sometimes you can remember and you can direct your own dreams. It's bizarre. So anyway, Data, after also checking with Ensign Joy on Deck 14, he decides to return to his quarters and paint Daddy and the situation. But he doesn't stop there. By the time we see him again, he's got, what, 20 paintings laying around the room? And I got to tell you something. Whoever did those paintings, they were amazing. It's even, especially the corridor. Did you see what kind of detail was put into the corridor?
Actually, I didn't really notice them. I mean, obviously there was a whole load of them, but
yeah,
but didn't really pay much attention.
Oh, wow. Okay, next time you should take a look at it. There was amazing. It was amazing work. So then, I guess my next question of, did you look for the painting of the daughter? That's not going to mean anything since you didn't look, but I sure did. I looked all around there to see if I can get a glimpse of the daughter as if that was ever going to be there.
No, of course not.
Okay, so Data wants to get zapped again. Cool. But this time, you know, he wakes up in the corridor, walks to the blacksmith, finds him hammering on a Berg's wing. Lots of smoke, and then the blacksmith is gone. And in his place, it's a bird who flies away. And then we find ourselves on the bridge of the Enterprise with the ops and con station removed. There was just some crazy imagery there. What do you think of all that?
I mean, actually, I liked it. I thought it was, the scene like flowed together pretty well. I'm also a big fan of Brent Spiner doing non-Data. And whenever we have him appear as and I think he only appears as Noonien Singh, right? But when that happens, I really enjoy him. He's pretty cool.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Come on, puppies, you can do it. Quiet down. I don't know what they're so angry about.
They're angry about something.
I guess so. Anyway, well, we better go on. I'm sorry, go on.
Oh, no, I'm just saying that I like the one. I like the Vision. I like Brent Spiner. I like Data talking to his father. And the things, I think when I first watched this, I didn't even realize it was the same actor. I know that sounds ridiculous, but I remember watching it as a kid thinking, nah, they're not the same people. They've just found someone that looks similar.
Really?
Well, as a kid, I was a kid this one. Yeah. I was perhaps 13 or so.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I suppose, yeah, but who do you think's a better actor, Data or Brent Spiner? I mean, it seems like, you know, obviously Brent is playing a human with human emotions and feelings, which we don't normally see on this series. So do you think he does a good job as a human, like he does as an android?
Oh, yeah, I do, yeah, yeah. I always enjoy his portrayals.
Okay.
I mean, whether it's Data, whether it's Law, whether it's Noonien Singh, and you know, as old, as middle, or as young, it's always cool. I mean, okay. The E4 was a bit iffy, but other than that, it's all good.
All right. Yeah. I get you. Okay. So we're on the bridge, like I said. Data's cat is now the captain. He's in the captain's chair. We see a plant, a lot of paintings, and Data. Dr. Soon suggests that Data is starting on a journey. I like that part. I don't know. Like I said, the whole Klingon thing was a little iffy, but this one is pretty good. So Data has decided he's going to spend some time each day dreaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's nice. Wonder if he's ever going to get any nightmares. That's why I say, I wonder if he can direct his dreams. Okay, so back to Worf. He finds his way onto this Klingon planet. And or not Klingon planet. This planet where these Klingons may be being held. And he runs across a Klingon girl. What are you doing out? So it's obvious that these people are there by choice. They weren't there by choice at the beginning, but they've decided to be there by choice now. Do you think it's still a prison where if these people say, hey, I would like to go home, the Romulans are going to say, not a problem?
Well, I don't think that they'll say not a problem, but I think that, what is it? It's supposed to be 20 years down the line.
Yeah.
I think that there's just an acceptance now that, you know, the woman that Worf saw was obviously too young to have.
Yeah.
You know, she would have been born there. The elders, you know, they probably know that there's no life for them to go back to. And obviously we're going to find out more and more about this in the second part. But
Oh yeah.
You know, I think it's I'm sure that the people wouldn't allow them to leave, but at the same time, it's not like the worst thing in the world to stay.
Maybe for us, but I don't know about a Klingon having Romulans walking around there with disruptors. It's a prison, no matter how you put it.
Okay, so that's one thing I thought was a little bit weird. And, you know, coming off Star Trek Picard and you see all of these Romulans in, you know, in jeans and stuff, you kind of think, well, actually, maybe TNG was a little bit silly that whenever they showed a Romulan, they would always show them in uniform. And, you know, these particular Romulans, they are in current day, with respect to themselves, military uniform. So, you know, maybe had this become, you know, I would have imagined this would have become less formal rather than still be a very, very formal military prison. And so I would have hoped that things like the uniforms would have been relaxed and the you know, the guns and the phaser rifles and stuff would have been relaxed. I mean, some of these people here are half Klingon, half Romulans. So I certainly
spoiler
see.
Alert.
Yeah, yeah. I certainly see people being able to live together as like a, you know, as a one-off community to be perfectly acceptable. In terms of a prison, I don't know. It's probably okay for the here and now. You know, what exactly happens? Like, 50 years down the line or 60 years down the line. At that point, it is a little bit of an odd one because it's probably not large enough to be self-sustaining, right? At some point, they're going to have to be reintegrated into a larger community.
Well, it makes me wonder if the Romulan Empire even knows this place exists.
Well, things that I think the episode tells us, right? But I haven't watched part two yet, so I don't know.
Because it seems like these people all may have started out as prisoners, but they seem to be now a community. They built a little community in their little prison, and now everybody's happy. It just makes no sense why they're even there. That's why I say I don't think the Romulan Empire knows about it. I don't think they sanctioned this. It would have been easier just to kill these Klingons and go on with life. Not support them and become their mates, so to speak. It makes no sense to me. But Worf does get there. He meets up with an elder who says that it is true. His father died at Kittimer. Well, that's a relief. However, I got more questions here. What are you doing here? How the hell are you? What the hell are you doing here? So there are 73 Klingons there, each one with no honor. Even their children supposedly have no honor. I'll make it 74 since Worf just got captured. And the Klingons love it there, and someday so will Worf. And that's the end of this. But I go back to poor Alexander. He just lost all his honor. But of course, I predict that this story will work itself out. Nobody needs to know that anything happened here. Worf gets to keep his honor. So does Alexander. Even though, you know, who's the Klingon god?
Kaelas? You mean
Kaelas? Yeah, Kaelas. Yeah, Kaelas will know in Worf's heart he was captured. Okay.
Yeah,
anyway.
The thing is, this stuff about when you're captured as a Klingon, you commit suicide, that's ridiculous. And they even acknowledge it is ridiculous in DS9 when, you know, Martok and others get captured by the Dominion and they don't commit suicide immediately. I think the thing that's happening here, and I think this happens with a lot of people in Worf's situation, by which I mean, you know, people from one culture that are being brought up in another. It's very easy and it's very common to kind of not see the nuances of your culture, of your inherited culture, and instead kind of feel, you know, frame it in very black and white. So I think that really what Worf is doing here is that, you know, yes, maybe by the letter of the law, maybe by some writing done by someone connected to Kaelas, you know, you're not supposed to make life easy for people to capture you, and a Klingon that is captured is pretty much done. Fine. But I do think that in general, I doubt that's how Klingon society operates. And, you know, I think Jadzia brought it up in DS9 and said, look, you know, you're the only one who actually obeys by this kind of honor rule book that you seem to believe. Everyone adheres to. You know, you have cheating Klingons, you have political Klingons, you have people that don't really care about their honor, and Klingon and Worf is kind of almost hyper Klingoned. And in a way, I think it's because of the fact that he wasn't brought up by Klingons. It was the thing that he was able to kind of attach to. So he's kind of gone really, really deep into his culture from a writing or a theoretical perspective, without having actually realized that probably the actual society is a lot more nuanced than what the writings suggest. So it's like people that grew up in England. Look, if you just read about England, you'd assume that everyone drank tea, but most of us don't, and it's okay. And I think that's really what Worf, he's coming to terms with, or will be coming to terms with, over the next, along when the Klingon civil, the Klingon war starts on DS9.
Right. Yeah. Then he has to figure out what to do. I don't know. You know, I tell you, for a race their whole life is duty and honor. Klingons are some of the most dishonorable people there are. Backstabbing, and it's all about what they think. And the moment is honorable. Or else, how would you explain the Duras, the entire Duras family? Not just one guy, but the two sisters, the son, every one of them are dishonorable. How does that happen? I could see one black sheep in the family, but every single one of them, including his own father? Okay, Klingon honor is what it needs to be at the moment, if that makes sense. Okay.
That's not particularly a bad thing. In any society has to be pragmatic. Even the ideals of the society on which things are based, that people will end up pragmatic.
Yeah. All right. Okay, so that's Birthright Part 1. Anything else we want to discuss? That's one of the fastest shows we've done ever.
I doubt that's true. The Worf story is very much set up for next week. The Data story is, I mean, it's relatively thin, right? It's just a bit of a little bit of back character. But I do enjoy it a lot. And it's great that Bashir is over. Even though, again, he doesn't really do much. It's not as if he's here to save today. He's just here to plug something in. Well, he's here to deliver a box that will eventually electrocute Data.
Yeah. All right.
Good day's work.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. Well then, it's time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. And as I look at my notes, I forgot to create something. So basically, this is very generic. I do like the Data scenes. I do like the Data story. I like to see. I can't wait to see where it goes from there. And I'll be honest, I haven't watched Birthright Part 2 in a very long time, so I don't quite remember how this ends, except for I know Worf will probably get off that planet, maybe after a little bit of fighting, but Klingon honor, it is what it is. It is what it needs to be when the writing is done that day. So in the end, I this is a fairly good episode. I'd say the middle. You're probably going to laugh, but I'm thinking this is at about a 3. So, Doc, tell us why it's a 5.
It's not a 5. It's not a 5. No, it probably is a 3, in fairness. But it gets a plus 1 because it's got Data in it, and it's a nice Data story, and it's also got Bashir in it, and I like Bashir. And, you know, had this just been on the Enterprise, it might have been a 3. It might have been just the middle of the road episode. Let's completely detach DS9 from it. They could have still done the same story, right? They could have found something from somewhere, and then someone could have said something to Worf, and you don't need DS9 to frame this.
No.
But I like the fact that they used DS9 to frame this, and having Bashir over is always good. I mean, I'd give it a 4. It's I think it is a relatively average episode, but it just happens to be dancing with various things that I enjoy, and that's the story of Data. And then also the scenery of DS9. I haven't also I haven't yet seen episode 2 in a very long time, so we'll have that reviewed for next week. But I'm kind of, you know, obviously I know what happens in it, but I'm interested to see how they kind of, how they execute that, because my recollection was is that the build-up was better than the execution on the other end. But we'll obviously have to wait and see until next week.
All right. All right, guys, so join us next time as we review episode 17 of TNG Season 6, and that's Birthright Part 2. Thank you for downloading and listening to tonight's show. Take care, and good night, all.
Good night.
Good night.